Yeah, you start with the Metta Sutta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desire, is now born again into this world. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. I think last time I was talking a little bit about sense restraint, and so there's different worlds that the Buddha talks of, and one of the worlds is the six senses, and he has a very nice simile, which is the simile of the six animals. So you have the eyes are a snake, and the snake goes out to the anthill. The ears are a crocodile, and the crocodile goes out to the water. The nose is a bird, and the bird goes off to the sky. The tongue is a hound, and the hound goes off to the village. The body is a jackal, and jackal goes off to the charnel ground, like the cemetery. And the mind is a monkey, and the monkey goes off to the forest. And so that's where we get monkey mind from. That's from the Buddha. And so every time, most people's problem you know, it's one of these sounds the mind. So it's nice. Similes are nice because they're something that you can visualize. So a part of meditation is finding tools that help us have our mind settle. And so this is a particular simile that I developed a lot because I have a very visual mind. And so, you know, if your mind's running off with thoughts, is you can see a monkey that's just running off through the forest. And if you're getting angry at a sound, you can see that it's the crocodile that's just gone back into the river. And so when the Buddha taught meditation, he said, well, to begin with, what happens is that it's like these six animals are tied together. So then when we hear a sound, the crocodile drags them over this direction, and then we think a thought, and the monkey drags him in that direction. And so we constantly have this pulling from all of our senses, you know, spasmodic liking and disliking at the six senses. And so it really wears us out. And so what we do when we come to meditate and to practice mindfulness is we tie the six animals to a post. So, I mean, they don't like that. To begin with, they break free from the post and still run off to their grounds. But the more we tie them to the post again and tie them to the post again, eventually they settle down. And then they can still stand, sit, or lay down, but they're tied to the post. So they can still look in the direction of their feeding grounds, but they won't run off in that direction. So that's why sometimes it feels like, you know, as we develop meditation, the mind might run off, you know, a thousand times. And then, but as one monk I listened to once, he said, you know, if you have 20 minutes of meditation and you only have 2 minutes of peace, that's still considered a good meditation. So don't set the bar too high, because we've spent our whole lives thinking. And if you're Buddhist or you believe in rebirth, then we've spent millions of countless past lives thinking as well. And so now we're trying to bring some kind of constraints and focus to our minds, and then we suddenly want peace. I want peace now. But it's not that easy, you know. We have to build up the causes slowly. And but finding the way, the means for our meditation is useful. So usually it's mindfulness of the body. It's what the Buddha recommends. And so that's the Buddha's main meditation object, was the breath, called anapanasati, a mindfulness of the in-breath and mindfulness of the out-breath. And it's quite a detailed practice, the way that he taught it. There's 16 stages to it. And it starts with mindfulness of the body, and then mindfulness of feeling, then mindfulness of mental states, and then kind of contemplation of truth. So it has like four stages. And so there's actual purpose in meditation and Buddhism, that eventually it's leading our mind to wisdom, leading our mind to waking up. But the way that meditation tends to be taught is more just focusing on the quieting of the mind, because that's the foundation. So usually, you know, that's what we think of when we meditate, is we've got to sit down and be quiet and get rid of our thoughts. But for some people, they have very restless minds. So getting rid of thoughts isn't an easy thing. And then other people, they may attach to the peace. So then, you know, they just spend their lives meditating and all they're doing is getting peace. So it's like we need to find a balance where we try to develop the peace, but eventually as well, we try to sharpen our wisdom as well. And there's meant to be different types of characters. And so the idea is, if you're somebody who uses your mind to develop wisdom more than you develop peace, then it's like you're going through a jungle thicket and you've got to cut through the jungle thicket 1,000 times. But if you're somebody who develops a lot of peace and then wisdom, then you have a very sharp sword and you only have to chop a few times. And so we all have to develop the peace and the wisdom to get through the thicket. It just depends on our temperament to what style we practice. And And also just to get into the momentum of practice, that's the most difficult part. And then once you get into the momentum of practice, as long as you keep the causes in place, then things are a lot easier. But, you know, just getting the foundation right is very helpful, because then, you know, joy and peace and inspiration, these things will arise naturally. And so that's why when the Buddha taught, he usually taught generosity and sila, which is like moral precepts, and then bhavana, mental cultivation. These are the three things that he would teach lay people, because they were the things that we can develop all day long. And I think in the West now we have this idea that, you know, we just sit down for meditate for half an hour every day and one day we'll get enlightened. But there's lots of causes that have to go in place as well. And we don't, in Buddhism, the Buddha didn't want us to blindly believe things, but things like goodness, he wanted to investigate. Well, you know, somebody who believes that there is no rebirth, that, you know, there is no good and bad actions, you know, that when we die, the body just breaks apart into elements and that's the end of it. Then there is no law of karma. Well, what would be an outcome of everybody believing that? Would the world lead in a better place or a worse place? And so we contemplate these truths, not blindly taking them on, but we start to see in our own lives whether they're true or not. Because if there is goodness, then surely you would be able to feel goodness. And so I think that's why in Buddhism we focus on generosity first. Because our world, and Buddha said the world is obsessed with the stain of miserliness. So now everybody, what's ours is mine. I'm not going to give anything to anybody. Worked all my life for all this stuff. And so, as I said last week, Ajahn Chah, he said, if you have a big apple and a small apple, you know, and then you're thinking, oh, maybe I'll give my friend this big apple. And then you're like, no, I'll give them the small apple. So he's like, no, you're going to give the big apple even if it hurts. Because then later on you reflect on it and then it'll bring you joy. So it's like we have to actually train our mind by having this conversation with ourselves and seeing, oh, okay, that was just greed that was taking hold of me. You know, I don't need the big apple. My friend can have the big apple. And then so we learn to give up our own desires. Not so we're doormats or we're, you know, give away everything. We still have to have moderation and know how to live rightly. But, you know, we can certainly all be more generous. And it's also a matter of watching the mind. So it's like even for the monks, he would taught the monks, like when we rinse our bowls, that rinsing or scraps, you know, they can be given to the insects and the animals. So it's like even just giving that to those insects, now it supports their life. You know, so these tiny little acts that we do every day, they all kind of build up. They build up this kind of momentum. Whereas if we just kind of threw it out and didn't even think about it, then we would be missing an opportunity of giving. So it's like, I think that's a part of mindfulness, is starting to look, you know, like how we do things. Like even as monks, like the way that we wear our robes, the way that we fold cloth, you know, all these little things, it's kind of called Khor Wat in Thailand. It's like your daily routine of how you do things. And, you know, there's like a slack way of doing things with muddled mindfulness, or there's a way of doing things which is good. And so it's like all of these things that we do in daily life, our way of kind of training our minds, going, okay, well, you know, why is my robe a big pile on the rack, you know? What happened there? Where was my mind when I put it there? And then, oh, okay, you know, actually, there's a proper way of doing this. And even like for monks, the way the Buddha taught us, even the way that we put cloth on the clothesline, and like we're not even meant to leave cloth on the lines overnight because it would damage it. And all these tiny little rules. because as one monk in Thailand said, you know, the tiny little rules, some monks don't think they mean much, but it's kind of like the sand that can blind your eyes, you know. So even though they don't seem like they mean much, but they'll block you from actually being able to become enlightened because you've kind of overstepped all the little things. And so by focusing on the little things in our lives, then that will accumulate, and it's kind of like all the little steps of mindfulness all through the day. And then that adds up to then when we come to meditate, we have all these causes, we have the generosity, we have the precepts, we have the mindfulness from all the little things that we did. And we come down the sit again, and it's very easy for the monkey to be content tied to the post. and then the more we have that wisdom, we can use something like the simile that I explained to go, oh, okay, so, you know, I'm getting angry at this sound now, but all the sound is the crocodile trying to get back to the other water. You know, so what's it going to do? It's going to fight with other crocodiles, go and eat fish. It's going to do what crocodiles do. You know, it's done that forever. But if it stays here tied to this post, it's going to be peaceful and happy. So we train our minds to say that, okay, a bit of restraint, even though it's difficult to do, it has a payoff. It's not easy to see now. It's easy to get angry. It's easy to go make a sandwich or whatever it is that we think is more important than our meditation. But the payoff of the meditation, the payoff of our daily actions, means that you know, we can develop the causes slowly. And then we don't have expectations, you know. Whatever we see or experience in our meditations, we just see them as phenomena arising and phenomena passing away. So we don't attach to the joy or the peace. Some people have visions. Some people have all sorts of things happen. But you just keep putting the causes in and then see what happens from that. And one teacher I like said that, Thampudong in Thailand, said that mindfulness is like trying to make an egg, you know, balance on its end. Every time you put it up, it falls over again. You put it up and it falls over again. So it's almost an impossible task. So if we try and have a goal of, you know, that when we do X amount of work, then everything's going to work out, who knows how long it's going to take us to develop these things. So, but if we're just content putting the causes in and being happy kind of with their own hearts and doing our best each day, then it won't be a chore. You know, it's just something that, you know, today we find opportunities. You know, when excessive lust or greed or hatred or delusion come up, we deal with it right there. We use the wisdom that we have to let go of these things. And then we're not letting the mind be like a out of control train. You know? We can put the brakes on and turn it around and come back to the present moment. Because actually our thoughts, you know, what are they? Is our thought about somebody that we saw this morning, is it really true now? I mean, they might be dead. We don't know. They could have had a car crash or a heart attack. B, they've had lots of breaths of air since then. They've probably eaten a few sandwiches. So the elements of their body are different. And their mental state, you know, we don't know. They may have become really angry or really happy. So you know, are we a different person when we're like really angry to when we're really happy? as one Thai Ajahn said, it's like sometimes we have the mind of a deva, sometimes we have the mind of a hungry ghost. And so the idea is, you know, we work with what we got, and we don't have to go far away. You know, what the bodies and minds that we have, the present moment that we have, that's enough to be more present to, and just see that yes, there is change, but also there is goodness, and that goodness can be cultivated. And the more we cultivate goodness, then that leads to blamelessness. That blamelessness means the mind is more easily luminous, and as the mind is more luminous, then it's more easy to meditate. And then when it's more easy to meditate, then it's easier to develop wisdom. And there are more difficult paths. You know, some people suffer all the way because that's their temperament. But there's also, the Buddha only recommended the happy and quick path. So that was the path that he wanted his disciples to follow. And there's two types of Dharma as well. There's the Dharma where we just learn to be good people and we use the Dharma of the Buddha and the wise people to become better people. And then there's the Dharma which actually leads to the end of suffering, which is the teachings that are peculiar to a Buddha. So, I had a difficult time learning to meditate. I think I learned in Buddhism there's 40 classical meditation objects. I think I learned about 30 of them. And so I think it's better to just choose one or two that you find useful. And but at the end of the day, it is more about showing up and doing the work and sticking to it. And I think somebody once gave some good advice that if you have a meditation object, then at least, you know, keep it for 20 minutes or something. Don't constantly change. So after 20 minutes of meditation, if you really find it's not working, then try something else or try and investigate the reasons why it's not working. And the other week I spoke about the five kinds of ways of dealing with difficult thoughts. And the other day I was reading the teaching on dividing the thoughts. And that's where you look at the thought and then you ask yourself, you know, is it leading in the right direction or is it leading in the wrong direction? And it goes, it's called two kinds of thoughts. It's in the middle length discourses of the Buddha. It's quite in depth. The idea is behind it that we see what the thought is. And if it's an unwholesome thought, a thought with which is based on sense desire, or a thought which is based on ill will, or a thought that's based on cruelty, then we abandon it. And then if it's a thought that's based on renunciation, a thought that's based on non-ill will, or a thought that's based on non-cruelty, then we acknowledge that it's a good thought, but because we're meditating, it's still going to lead to agitation. So we still let it go. And it's kind of this way of contemplating the thoughts. And so some of these teachings of the Buddha, they're not to necessarily contemplate all the time, but sometimes to contemplate them means that we have another tool to step away from our thinking. So we can see, we can... literally, this is one of the things that the Buddha did before he became a Buddha. So some of the teachings say, you know, when I was a bodhisattva, you know, this is what I did. And this is an example of one of those teachings. And because at the end of the day, our thinking is mainly, in this modern world, we have so many physical comforts. So most of the suffering that we experience is from our minds. It's our thoughts. So learning meditation will bring peace and calm to the heart. And then learning to understand the process of the six senses will mean we can kind of distance ourselves from perceptions and feelings. And a short version of enlightenment is that if you see the world like a bubble, or you see the world like a mirage, then the Lord of Death can't see you. So an Arahant enlightened being, they just see feelings from contact and perceptions from contact like bubbles and mirages. You see, it's all stories of the mind. It's like the pitter-patter of rain, or like a mirage on a hot summer's day. So there's something there, but when you look closely, there's nothing really there. No, it's just a bubble, it's just a mirage. And the very, very refined states, because then after giving up the body, then the enlightened beings then have to give up the mind. And then that must be very difficult, because the mind is very luminous and bright. And then so if you've given up the body, which the body would be quite coarse, but then to give up the luminosity of the mind. But then that's what enlightenment is about, is giving up attachment to things that bring suffering. And but the Buddha didn't never went as far as explaining exactly what nirvana is. Nirvana is beyond the concepts of this world. He said it's the extinguishment of greed, hatred, and delusion. So it's like the cessation, like a fire going out, going cool, of suffering. And but it's beyond becoming. It's the end of birth and death. It's vast, like the great ocean, hard to describe. So that's like what the enlightened beings and the Buddha focus on. But even if beings aren't focused on enlightenment, then the Buddha would still encourage people just to be good people. So people would come to him who weren't even Buddhists to learn teachings of how to be good people. So we don't, we just work with what we've got and use the tools to develop kind of like spiritual paramis, is the word in Buddhism. So that's enough talking. Let's do a guided meditation. Just take a moment to center and become comfortable. Take a few deep breaths if you like. Just relax completely. Giving up any difficulties or concerns. Just coming into the present moment. Relax the toes and the feet. It's bringing relaxation and awareness into the toes and feet. Relax the ankles. And the lower legs. Spreading this relaxation up through the lower legs. And this fused with relaxation. Into the knees. Allowing the knees to relax deeply. And the thighs, spreading from the knees into the thighs. So the thighs become relaxed. And the hips, the weight of the body onto the seat or the cushion, the waist, everything in this region, completely at ease. Relaxed, suffused with relaxation. Just become aware of the belly from inside out, rise and fall of the belly. Rises with an in-breath, falls with an out-breath. Just spreading this awake awareness through the belly. relaxing the base of the spine and the lower back. Spreading around to the sides, middle of the spine, the middle back. Spreading around to the sides, the upper spine and the upper back. Under the arms, above the belly, the diaphragm and the solar plexus. Everything in this region completely relaxed. And the chest, the upper torso, the lungs, the heart. Awake and relaxed. Alert and at ease. Filled with relaxation. Relax the shoulders deeply, allowing them to unwind, settle, relax. The upper arms, elbows, lower arms, wrists, hands, fingertips. Just become aware of the breath. Relax the breath. Relax the chin, the jaw, the lips. The upper cheeks, around the nose, the nostrils, the nose. Under the eyes, the eyelids, the eyes themselves, just bringing kindness and relaxation to the eyes, allowing them to unwind and settle. Letting go of all tension, worry, concern, anxiety, difficulty, harshness. So the eyes become relaxed. So difficulties are like balloons floating up into the sky. Letting go of all difficulties and concerns. As the eyes relax. Eyebrows, temples, the forehead. Muscles of the face, the whole head, the whole neck, the whole body. Just welcome and accept the body as it is. It's comfortable, alert and upright, relaxed and at ease. We bring our attention to the mind. Just bring kindness to the mind. Settling into the present moment. Don't need to worry about anything. Can let go of the past. In the future, we can give up. Even thinking about things in the present externally, let it all go. Just allow the heart to rest in the present moment, settling into this experience, what is right now. If you have a meditation object, you're welcome to take that up. I'll do a guided meditation with metta and the breath. Welcome to follow along with. Wherever the breath feels most comfortable, some people watch at the tip of the nose, some at the lip, some in the heart, some at the belly. You just choose what's most natural for yourself. Some people even follow the breath in and out, or watch the whole experience. Just allow them to choose what's most peaceful and comfortable. We bring our attention to an in-breath and an out-breath. If you'd like a mantra for the meditation, you can use the word metta. Met with the in-breath, ta with the out-breath. It means like universal benevolence, universal friendliness. Metta. Tuning into the feelings of an in-breath. Tuning into the feelings of an out-breath. Being okay with whatever is. Accepting and allowing. Metta. Tuning into feelings of goodwill with the in-breath. Tuning into feelings of goodwill with the out-breath. Metta. A bird snug in the nest, don't need to fly off anywhere. Metta. Metta. Metta with the in-breath, metta with the out-breath. The in-breath has a beginning, middle and end. An out-breath has a beginning, middle and end. Metta. Opening our hearts to feelings of goodwill, feelings of benevolence. Metta. Tuning into the feeling of the in-breath. Tuning into the feeling and texture of the out-breath. Universal benevolence, universal goodwill. Metta. An in-breath is in the present moment. An out-breath is in the present moment. Is friendliness with the in-breath, friendliness with the out-breath. Metta. I'll be silent for the next 5 minutes. I'll just try and keep with the breath, in-breath, out-breath. Present moment and metta. The feelings of the in-breath, feelings of the out-breath. Like a bird snug in the nest. Metta with the in-breath. Metta with the out-breath. Being content with whatever is good enough. Welcoming, allowing, being friends with. Metta. If you're content with the breath, you can stay with the breath. We're going to end with a short metta recitation. If you like, you can recite, may I be happy, may I be happy, may I be happy. I really mean it. May we be happy and free from difficulties and suffering. May we be at ease. May I be happy. May I be happy. May all those beings in this room be happy. May all those beings in this room be happy. May they be happy and free from suffering. May they be at ease, free from difficulties. May all beings on this property, including any kangaroos and insects, birds, devas, any beings, including those in this room, may all beings on this property be happy. May they be free from suffering. May they be at ease. May all beings in Perth be happy. May all beings in Perth be happy. May they be free from suffering. May they be at ease. May all beings in Australia be happy. May all beings in Australia be happy. May they be free from suffering. May they be at ease. May all beings in the world be happy. May all beings in the world be happy. Those on land, those on in the sea, those in the air, the seen, the unseen, all beings in the world. May they be happy and free from suffering. May they be at ease. May all beings in the three realms of existence. May all beings in the three realms of existence. May they be happy and free from suffering. May they be at ease. We share the merits of our meditation with all beings, including ourselves. When you're ready, you may open your eyes. we finish with a chant on the other side. Now let us chant the verses of sharing and aspiration. Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtues, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life. May they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless. Through the goodness that arises from my practice and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease and all harmful states of mind, until I realize Nirvana in every kind of birth. May I have an upright mind with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge, unsurpassed is the protection of the Dhamma. The solitary Buddha is my noble lord. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and delusion be dispelled. And a little blessing.
Bhavatu sabba mangalam rakkhantu sabba devata sabba buddhanukhavena sadha soti bhavantu te. Bhavatu sabba mangalam rakkhantu sabba devata sabba dhammanupāvena sadā soti bhavantu te. Bhavatu sabba mangala rakkhantu sabba devata sabba sanghanupāvena sadā soti. I want to take
some safe travels home.